Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, General Hospital recasts Kiki Drome. Kelly accuses Phyllis of poisoning her on The Young and the Restless. Nicole and Serena face off on Days of Our Lives. And The Bold and the Beautiful celebrate 7,000 episodes. All this and much more on today's show, so stay tuned. Jillian Bo, welcome.
What's up?
Mike, welcome.
Hi.
Sarah Babel, welcome.
Bonjour.
Melody Akles, welcome back.
Hey, everybody.
Wait a minute, hold up. Why is it that we all have our government names out in display and Mike is just Mike?
Because I can never pronounce it correctly, so in order to avoid butchering it, I am kind to everyone.
Now, you need to be universal. We all drop in our last names, too, in solidarity with Mike.
This last week on The Bold and the Beautiful, it celebrated its 7,000th episode, but before we get to that, for three weeks in a row, The Bold and the Beautiful has been the best soap on television, and it was fantastic this last
week. It was juicy.
Mel, you've been gone, so let me have it. What were your favorite moments of The Bold and the Beautiful this week?
The Bold and the Beautiful was fire this week, okay? The whole Rick, Caroline, Maya, Ridge thing came to a head at the end of the week. You got in the beginning of the week with Rick going in on Caroline and everybody else that was at the meeting so bad that Liam came in and knocked him down to the floor like, you don't speak to my woman like that. And I was like, woo, it's getting heated in here, okay? He got mad because Caroline had kissed Ridge again, but the whole time I'm thinking, haven't you been screwing Maya for the last couple of weeks? But you want to be mad. Okay, whatever, Rick, I see you. So we're going to flash forward to Thursday, because it didn't, they had the 7,000th episode on Friday. Flash forward to Thursday, Caroline and Ridge making out on the sofa, getting a little hot and heavy. You see Rick, whoever he was with before had left the gun. You see Rick come in, he peeking through the door. He see
Stephanie's
him making out.
Stephanie's gun.
Yeah. You see him peeking through the door. You see him put the gun through the door. Blah, 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 blah. It was like flashbacks to the end of All My Children, because remember, he shot everybody at the party. Or so we think. Anyways, it was
so
good. That's
because he's on Stephanie's side of the bed.
I'm so wrong. But it was so, so good. I was screaming at the end of the episode. I loved it. Bold and Beautiful, get it.
Mike, my favorite two moments this last week were, one, when Maya answers the door in Brooke's bedroom line to find Brooke there, and then when Rick and Caroline were just screaming at each other in the boardroom. What were your favorite moments this last week?
When Rick shot Ridge, that would have been my favorite moment.
Okay.
But you've
been dreaming of it for a while, have you?
God, yes. I know it's a fantasy, but it's my fantasy too.
Oh, child. Right,
but
how apropos would it be that Rick shot him with Stephanie's gun, her favorite child, her favorite human being, period, with her gun? That would be so epic.
And then my other favorite moment is probably going to be, there were some good moments, I'll admit. And Luke, that's something that all of us have not said, I think, in unison, is that The Bold and the Beautiful was the best soap that we've watched. I also think that Brooke and Maya is going to be really good.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
It
looks
like it.
I'm holding out as that. But I thought there were a lot of good moments. I thought Maya kind of backpedaling and letting everybody know that this is all Rick's game, it was good. And I like Rick railing against... Yeah, it is. And I like Rick railing in the meeting about to Ivy and Caroline.
Oh, the classic line. Yeah. You two, Australia and New York, are only a flight away. I said, oh, he's on
Yeah.
Jillian, what did you think?
Oh, my God. You know The Bold and the Beautiful. I've been in love with it. I've been actually liking it farther. You know, you said the last 3 weeks. It's been more for me. It's been fantastic. Oh, Rick telling those bitches how to cow eat the cabbage. I loved it. And him railing against Liam. Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. And Liam finally getting some chutzpah. Because, let's be real, out of dollar bills, two sons, I really don't count Will, because Will barely knows what boogers are right about now.
So it's two adults.
Yeah, it's two adult sons. Let's be real. If Wyatt was there, Wyatt would have been like brother-in-law or not. He would have whooped Rick's ass for talking to his family like that. Liam's more the peacemaker. And we see Liam's like, don't make me get mad. You know, and it's like, oh, look at you getting some balls. Bill would so totally be proud. I love Bill trying to like tell Maya off, and Maya is just standing her ground. Freaking, it was fantastic. It was amazing. It was great soap. And then when Brooke comes with that girl and her teddy, I'm like, isn't this how Stephanie would greet Brooke? I'm like, this is so great! And the flashback for people who think, for some people, you know, they're like, oh, for some of the new viewers, I should say, they're like, oh, Rick, this is out of the blue that he hates Ridge. I'm like, you must be new. And Brad must have been like, yeah, let me insert this flashback where they show a young Jacob Young saying, he's not going to get away with doing this to my mom. I'm like, thank you, Lord. For people who don't know, this has been history in the making. It's fantastic. My only gripe about it would be for Rick to bring up Liam being a little two-faced bitch. For him to be like, I know you're not talking and you played Steffi and my sister like a game of chess, boy. For him to like throw that up in his face. And I do hope somewhere down the line, Maya tells Bill, you should be thanking me. And for Bill to be like, the hell you mean I should be thanking you? And, you know, for Maya to be like, if it wasn't for me telling about Ridge and Caroline, your Katie would be with Ridge right about now. So you really should be thanking me. So it's been a fantastic. B&B has just been off the charts.
I agree with you, Jillian. That would have been a really good thing for Rick to throw up in his face.
I'm wondering if down the line with Steffi coming back, I wonder if he's going to throw that up in his face.
I think they may be saving it for when, you know, Steffi and whoever New Hope turns out to be comes, so it will be able to play more into the story.
Yeah, we don't need New Hope.
Oh,
this
believe me.
So good.
I have no desire for New Hope. Apparently, Hope was this albatross that was holding the entire show down, because since the moment she peaced out, the show has been on fire. So I'm like, Hope, build a brand new life in Europe, and, you know, live and prosper off camera, but you know she's going to come back, so.
Yeah.
Well, Sarah, what were your favorite moments of the week, and what did you think of little Miss Nicole Avant?
Well, I really like Nicole. First of all, that actress did a very good job for her debut days. That's always a very difficult task for a new soap performer when you have to just come in and do these kind of expositional type scenes and sort of make it work, and she absolutely did. She's a little firecracker, and I like that she wasn't exactly what you would have expected, because, like, based on everyone's like, oh, Maya's trash, Maya's of the streets, and then her little sister comes in this cute little preppy outfit, and she's studying computer science at UCLA, and you're like,
yes, I like yes. that.
I like that. First of all, it continues back in the Bell tradition of showing women in non-traditional female roles that's gone back to, like, Ashley and Brooke being chemists.
Yes!
You know, and it's just such nice to show, you know, show, like, for, you know, the four teenagers who are still watching daytime soaps, hey, I can be a cute little computer scientist. That's a great message. But, like, you know, that you realize, oh, Maya actually is from this middle-class background. She is, you know, her family has basically you know, disowned her because, you know, she ended up in prison after coming to L.A. to be a star. But, like, and that her, you know, it was nice that her sister had her back, but they still had this really combative relationship. Although I will say, it made Maya look stupid when she's all like, computer science? What are you going to do with a computer science degree? And you're like, girl,
don't you want to be a model?
Yeah.
She's the lead model. It doesn't take brains for that, Sarah.
Yeah, I'm just saying. She's heard of Facebook. She's seen The Social Network, you know. She would understand that that would be an excellent career path for her sister to pursue to not end up like her. But I like that she's going to be a little schemer. And I loved basically just about everything about this week. And I like that, like, you know, people are also aghast by Rick. But some of what he was saying at that meeting, like, Why should he greenlight Allie's shoe line? Because she can't stop drawing. Girl, first of all, she's kind of crazy. Second of all, I'm like sitting there like, well, did Allie like source some factories and create a supply chain for this? Or did she just make some pretty little drawings? Because this is like a whole new product line that would cost millions of dollars to launch properly. And people are like, Rick's being a jerk for like wanting to think about this before he buys.
Yeah, but they over the years, they haven't gone into the weeds like that very often.
Oh, forget all that. But I like the fact that Oliver, you know, everybody's always loyal to their other half. But Oliver was like, Rick, you know, Oliver tried to break it down for Crazy Pants and was like, you know, Rick may have a point. Just chill and give him a chance. I'm like, seriously, dude, like, calm down. But I also was like, okay, Rick, you know, she is quick to, you know, lash out at somebody. I'm like, I don't know if you want to talk to crazy cousin like that or your crazy niece like that. She talks to.
Well, the thing that I thought was interesting about it is I got why he didn't approve that storyline, but when he went into Cousin Koala for the success that campaign was having and then just torpedoed it, that to me didn't quite make as much sense.
Well, no, that was to show that, like, we're supposed to.
That was pure revenge, but.
No, that made sense. That was revenge.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also, like, I got the sense that we as viewers were supposed to be like, Rick is doing a terrible job because he's motivated by his personal, you know, vendettas as opposed to every single other person who's ran Forrester over the years. But,
except Eric.
Yeah. So, it's, you know, but I mean, if you, from a business standpoint, and it was also that, the thing with Cousin Koala that kind of bumped me is the way that fashion sequence, modeling sequence played out, it was like, Cousin Koala is a little awkward. She can't compare to, like, you know, the perfect model that is Hope. And then now everyone's like,
yeah, that's kind of what Rick was trying to say on the low, but it all came out, I felt, you know, that was what he was trying to say on the low. But we all know what the real deal is that he's just pissed that she's a snitch and she's supposed to be blood.
Yeah, oh yeah, I mean, Ivy and Caroline's friendship was the weak link in the storyline because they didn't do enough to build it up to the point where you believe that they were, like, ride or die for each other. But that said, one thing for me, though, I just want to talk about how fabulous the Maya Brooks scenes were. It wasn't just her coming out in the Brooks bedroom teddy, and she was, you know, she was wearing that thing. But it was just, like, how much, it like, Brooke, you know, it's the classic soap thing where Brooke, you know, is kind of, hates her or suspicious of her because she sees herself in her. Because Brooke was Brooke was the trash from the valley.
And the cherry on top for that was her being the one saying that Stephanie's portrait need to be back up there after all the years of those two battles.
Yes!
Brooke was just mad that Ridge never put a portrait of her up there.
Yeah. Eric and Ridge were like doing that. She probably was like, I gave those bastards booze.
She's like, I slept with all three of the men and not one of them made a portrait for me.
You didn't even put a hand puppet of me up there. Are you serious? You got this, Heffa. Like, I like it. I like it. It's setting up for carrying on that tradition again. It's gonna be bananas. I also love Brooke telling what's her face off. What is that chick say? Oh god, no. Quinn off. When Quinn was like, you need to make Hope come here, Hope, and she was like, Rich, it wasn't for you, this wouldn't have happened if you had stayed away from my house. I'm like, tell it again. I love it.
Well, let's talk about the 7,000th episode. There were some wonderful flashbacks there. My favorite part, of course, was seeing Darlene Conley as Sally Spectra. Oh, what a great loss that is. What are your favorite moments from, or single moment, I should say, from the last 7,000 episodes? My favorite B&B moment of all time is...
Just 7,000, huh, Luke?
Oh, my God.
My favorite moment for the past 7,000 episodes is Stephanie kneeing Eric in the balls.
Well, which time
by far my favorite moment.
Which time was that? I mean, she's probably done that several times over the years.
The only time I've ever seen her do it, I guess, was, a few years back in a boardroom scene. Jillian, what was your favorite?
My favorite moment was when Brooke, the slut from the valley, trumped Stephanie's bitch ass by taking 51% of that company and going placow with her belief. There you go. Stephanie always underestimated that girl. People still underestimate Brooke. They just think that she married in well. People do not realize, as who said it? Sarah said it earlier, that Brooke is a chemist. When you first started this show, Brooke was in school to be a chemist. Brooke ain't just all beauty and no brains. That's a chick who have both. And I love that she was able to scheme and connive and get one over on Stephanie. And it's threaded through history because Stephanie schemed and connived and got one over on Brooke's mother, Beth, because Eric and Beth were college sweethearts. Not until Stephanie, with her hot-in-the-ass self, was all, Eric, I'm pregnant with your son, and then dangled that carrot, which was her family's money, for him to start Forrester Creation. So there it is.
Sarah?
Well, once... scene that has always stuck in my mind and just that I can't believe they went their way was when Deacon deflowered Bridget over the phone with like the whole Forrester to every single moan and groan. And the thing that cracked me up is that like at no point did anyone think maybe we should just hang up this phone.
And then
is he doing it right? Let's see. Let's keep going.
You know?
Scene just always, like, I can't think of another show that would have gone there. Because the thing about Bold is that it will do, like, these classy business storylines, and then it will just get down and dirty when it feels like it.
You know?
And Brad Bell said on the 7,000th episode, he wasn't afraid to go so far, but then the actors have to take it the rest of the way. Mike?
I thought, you know, when they were doing that deflowering scene, I thought Eric was going to be like, "Aw, she gets it from her mother." So, still goes down in history. That was still like, whoa.
Mike?
I like the stuff that you guys were talking about, but I kind of like the comedy that they do sometimes. Like when Eric was having an affair and he had to go out on the ledge and, you know, he was screwing around with Donna. I mean, there's so many good episodes. Like when Stephanie decided that, you know, she wanted to shed the blonde hair, and her and Darlene, after all those years of being kind of at each other's throats, they got drunk and cut her hair, and just there was a lot of good moments like that. And
Mel?
Okay, I only been watching this show a couple of years, so probably my favorite of recent memory is when Katie read Everybody for Filth at that birthday party or whatever party it was, where Taylor told her about Brooke and not Brad Carlton, Dollar Bill cheating. That was really good.
So what did you think of the 7,000th episode, Sarah?
I really liked it. Like, you know, I was always, like, I was a little wary of them doing something that was, you know, behind the scenes and breaking the fourth wall. But then when I saw it, it was so classily done. Like, you know, the fact that they remembered Darlene Conley, who has been off the show for a few years, which not, you know, every show would have done. The fact that they actually showed you, I learned new things about how they produced the show, which was interesting to me, because a lot of things that I assumed had been done with stunt people turned out to have been done with green screen that doesn't look janky like most of
them. And a man.
And then Steffi was pretty hilarious, especially, you know, but
when they paused the frame.
Yeah, but you know, because like those things looked good. They looked like primetime caliber location shoots. And like seeing that like those stairs were made of foam. I mean, I knew they'd done something with those because, you know, the stunt person would have been dead otherwise. But like it was really cool to see all that and to just kind of get a feel, even though, you know, they was all staged and scripted, like the real sense of a family, the atmosphere that there was on the set and the friendships that there were between the actors and between the cast and the crew. And I thought it was cool that they let so many behind the scenes people talk, not just Brad Bell, which you would have assumed, but like, I'm like, oh, there's Michael Menez, the associate head writer. Who would have, you know, that's cool to see. And various other, you know, yeah, the makeup department and all that. It's kind of cool for, since most of the fans will never get to see that, it's, you know, nice to see how the sausage is made and see the actual dedication of the stage, which I think was a very classy, appropriate move for CBS to do for the show after 7,000 episodes.
Jillian, what did you think of the 7,000th episode?
I loved it. I thought, you know, I loved it. I think their sister show, I know some people will try to shade me, but whatever. Their sister show needs to take a page from their book when you commemorate a special occasion, because YNR's 40th sucked. But it shows that this show is really in to win it. Did you see that? I love the episode. I love the scenes I liked were how they're treated like rock stars abroad. They put in all this effort, you know, and some people like the soup. I mean, even though it was spooftacular moments, you know, on the soup, they're treated like royalty. Did you see, like, when Jackie McInnes Wood was in South Africa and she was like at the airport or the mall and it was just like wall to wall people? It was insane. And that's how soaps used to be back in the day, and I'm just hoping that they get back to that.
Mel,
I really like the 7,000 episodes. You know, it shows that they're really going back and honoring their history. I love all the stuff with Sally Spectra, with Darnley Connolly. I didn't watch The Bold and the Beautiful. You know, I just recently started watching. But I do remember my grandmother watching it, and she was her favorite. She loved her some Sally Spectra. So I thought it was really good. I liked it.
Mike?
I really enjoyed, like Jillian was talking about, their international fans. That was an eye-opening thing for me. I'm really glad that they actually highlighted that a bit, because I had no idea that this show was that popular in all the countries that they had visited. I liked the tapes that they did for their audition. I thought that was pretty cool. And I liked the older flashbacks. I kind of wish they had done a little bit more, but I know it's 30 minutes. And
I kind of wish they were on for an hour. I actually kind of wish they were on for an hour.
They kind of, to me, they kind of focused on a lot of the more current stuff. A lot of soaps do that when they do retrospectives. They tend to only showcase things that happened the last couple of years that is very fresh in the memory, but I feel like they really need to go back farther. But again, it was 20 minutes, and I actually thought it was a good episode. It seems like they're a very tight ship, and I kind of got a different perspective on it, and I liked it.
I kind of thought they went back a lot when they showed like the test screening, and
I liked that. I thought that was pretty neat.
I think that they should have clipped YNR for half an hour and given B&B a full hour, so we could have seen the history and why it's number one across, you know, the world and so forth.
Let's talk a little bit about Days of Our Lives. Sarah.
Chow, you and Mike, take it away.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
What did you think of Backwoods Bubba versus Victor?
It's like watching a lion versus a fly. It's not a very interesting battle when, I mean, and the fact that it's a battle at all means, like, they're not writing Victor properly to me, because Victor should have just, you know, steamrolled
him.
Yeah, steamrolled him. I mean, literally sent a steamroller to roll over his head. Victor could do that, you know. It's just like they're trying to make this guy so much bigger and badder. Like, they've already had him, like, you know, kill EJ and do all this other stuff. And you're just like, how is this rube getting one over on everybody? He doesn't seem smart enough. I don't get why Kate wants to be with him. I mean, it's just, he's just there, and he's getting away with stuff and doing all this stuff because the plot says he should.
I agree.
Yeah.
Like, this last week I was watching Victor, and it was like, Victor's sitting there and he's talking about how this guy is making moves against him and taking things over. And I'm like, how is this happening? It is not logical. It does not make sense. It is not giving Victor a good storyline. And I don't care about
one phone
Kate's
call.
Latest fuck buddy. I just don't
one
care.
One phone call, Victor can make this guy go away. Like,
especially after he hurt one of his workers, right?
You know, this poplar buff Ozarks mofo could get one over Victor Kiriakis? I'm sorry, no sir, no bueno. Mm-mm.
Maybe if he was doing this to Chad, I might be able to believe.
No,
That's what I'm saying is, like, maybe because Chad's like the new young Demira.
Don't pass go. You do not collect $200. No. Chad's still a Demira. He can still pick up a phone and call Big Daddy, and Big Daddy can be like, look.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is, in a lot of stories, the arc will be that the person who's being groomed will make mistakes along the way.
Yeah, but Chad would call his pappy.
Making mistakes against Backwoods Bubba, that would make more sense to me.
No.
It would be more logical.
No. If he was doing this to Sonny, and you know Sonny is all principled, Snicker. I would probably be like, maybe. If he was doing this to Will, maybe. Chad, I'm sorry, no. Chad can make one phone call, too. And Stefano can end him. Stefano can be like, you asked Kate about her last boyfriend, what I did to him.
Stefano that they're telling on screen is the
But I'm saying, no, I'm just saying. No, I'm just saying, like, you know, if it was, you're saying if it was Chad, my interpretation of that would be, if that would be Chad, Chad would try to handle him, and I guess he would get a little the best of Chad, but Chad would make one phone call and Stefano would ether that dude. So,
Mike, are you enjoying this story?
You know he is, girl.
Well, okay, now. This is not my favorite, but... What? Wait a second, now.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm positive. I'm Team Teresa. That's what I like. I'm in love with Teresa. So, but as far as Billy Clyde and Victor goes,
Billy Clyde Tuggle. And I'm like,
well, that's what I've been calling him since the beginning. But you know, the thing is, I find, like, I agree. I don't understand why Kate is screwing around with him at all. It makes no sense to me because I always think that Kate is smarter than this. And I've been saying that Kate did all this work to get Jordan into town. And then when she met that guy and she went down to Arkansas and she actually met him face to face, it never occurred to her to have his background checked. And it doesn't make sense to me.
See, I will agree with you with that. Now, we will agree about days with that, honey. Because, that's probably one of the only things we can agree on. Because the Kate that we know, Kate will investigate her enemy's enemies. So she could be like, so she can cut out the middleman. Or if the middleman tries to get funky with Kate and try to blackmail her, Kate can be like, I know you're not trying to pull this on me when I have this on you. So you be a good little foot soldier and get back to work. It's just making Kate stupid. And Kate is not stupid. She has stupid kids, but Kate is not stupid.
And the other thing too is she's a parent and she is aware that this guy was a child abuser. So I don't even know what she sees. I know that she doesn't like Jordan. I get that. But she's still, I don't think that as a mother, she would like somebody who abused their child.
Wait, does Kate know that he raped Jordan?
No, but she knows I think she knows that he smacked them around and that's why she had to run away. But she doesn't seem to care about that.
See, Kate, that's what I'm saying, you know. If Kate knows that he smacked those kids around, she knows what Curtis did to Austin and Billy when she was married to him and what he did to her. So Kate would cut, you know, even though Kate wouldn't like him, Kate would be like, you know, I cannot stand this bitch, but what I hate more is a child abuser. So I'm wondering if Kate knows, you know, the depths of what he did. And I think if Kate knew he was a child molester, oh, you know, Kate would be like, no more goodies for you.
He'd be calling Stefano to cut the light bulb.
Yeah.
Now, Mike, you mentioned Teresa. Are you liking her with her new boyfriend? My favorite Teresa moment of this last week was when she went up to have Eric buy her a drink. But what are you thinking of things?
Oh, well, that was funny. Yes, I actually liked that moment. But I actually liked when she pretended she rolled over and she was talking to the guy, Clint, and she called him a different name. But I know she did it on purpose. And then, you know, I just find her character. I enjoy her whenever she's on. I know some people don't like her, but
I love her because
love her. She's everything. She's ensconced in herself into not herself. They put her into so many different storylines. She's in Brady. She's in Kristen. She's in Melanie. She's in Daniel. She's in the hospital. She's up every. She's in every storyline, and I just like it. I just enjoy her. She's entertaining, and Jen Lilly is making. She's wonderful. She's doing a great
job. Sarah?
Yes?
What did you think of JJ and Eve?
Okay, so here's the thing with JJ and Eve. I'm like, they have the heat. I'm like, now let's tell the story, because it's the same dynamic over and over again. I hate you, and now I'm suddenly kissing you. Like, why don't they start at this point addressing the chemistry? You know, I mean, Eve's
it's part of the role play, Sarah.
No, I mean, it's just because it's like, again, it's all this is over Paige. Paige isn't even a damn obstacle anymore since they broke up. I mean, And it's like, I kind of feel like the story would have worked better, now that I'm thinking about it, if Eve's plan was deliberately to seduce JJ to break them up and reigned for Paige to, you know, and just
throw
that's
away. The story I wanted from the very beginning. Yeah. Oh. That's the one I wanted.
Or I kind of wanted from the jump for Eve to seduce Jennifer's son. That would have been epic.
Yeah, and just forget about the Paige aspect of the story.
Yeah.
No,
it's entirely. Don't you think it's possible that at some point that's what she's going to do?
Well, Mike, you got too much hope in this, though. Well, stop it. Stop it, Mike. Stop it. You hush.
They slept together in October for the first time. Look how little the story has moved since then.
It hasn't.
Mike is just trying to throw them a bone. Like, Ken Corday is going to, like, declare one day Mike Jubonville Day. Because this boy is just trying to save that show.
Hired Lucas Kerr to romance Teresa, so you know, stranger things have happened.
Yeah, Luke over there, Luke over there, romancing Teresa.
He and Luke got it covered. Don't you worry about that.
So,
let's talk about Nicole and Serena.
Hey, nobody knows what Luke looks like. You have no idea whether that's him or not.
True.
What did you guys think of Nicole and Serena this last week? Because things are heating up a little. Maybe simmering is the word, but they did bump into each other at the bar. Drinks were spilled or threatened or accused of being thrown. Jillian, what'd you think?
I mean, again, no shade against Melly Arch. I know Luke thinks the sun rises and sets in her orbit, but we need to see why we should, you know, what's the tea with this girl? Like, what is the big damn deal? I mean, it's starting to pick up, but I mean, Arion Zucca is like, look, I can't do it all on my own, baby. I mean, I still don't care for her character. I still don't care. I would care for the character a little bit more if Eric would stop this. I hit you, Nicole. It's like, bitch, it's been how long now? Shut your face. If they were back together and this chick came in there trying to insert herself in their relationship, fine. And they had all this history and chemistry and she knew Eric before he was all, hallelujah, but fine, but I don't care. I don't care. They need to have Eric stop, like, shitting on Nicole. Like, I just want Nicole to take one of her pumps off and clock him upside the head and say, enough.
Mel,
mm-hmm.
What did you think of the news that General Hospital is recasting Kiki Jerome? Daytime Confidential's own Jamie Giddens broke the story. It's now going to be portrayed by Haley Aaron, who played Abby on The Young and the Restless. What are your thoughts?
Mel ain't having a Kiki over that, I tell you that.
My first thought initially was, why do we even need Kiki in the first place?
Thank you.
Why do we need to recast this character? Let Kristen Alderson, let her go off into the sun, into Pirates pilot season, and be very successful. Please. Why do we need to recast Kiki? Okay, so if I'm gonna recast her, why do we have to recast her with this nobody, I said it, from The Young and the Restless? I didn't even remember that girl was on The Young and the Restless until I talked to Romac, and she was like, she was the girl that Emmy replaced, and I was like, that shitty girl? Yeah.
I said that's going to be an interesting conversation because after Emmy got her job, this chick act like Emmy like came up there and was like, bye, bitch. No, that wasn't Emmy's fault.
Mm-hmm. It's not her fault that you suck, baby.
Exactly.
I'm just going in tonight. I don't have anything to do with that. So
she shaded M. Ryland online. She gave a little subtweet shading her online. So that's going to be real interesting that you coming in her house.
Or is it Emmy Lord? The artist formerly known as Marcy Ryland. Whatever.
I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't. So, you know?
Oh, anywho, I don't understand the purpose of needing Kiki and half the cast on General Hospital right now because the show is so bloated, it's ridiculous. Why do we need to recast Kiki when we're only going to get rid of her in the next 3 months because, hey, we've seen this already?
I don't get it. Like, she's not needed. Like, well, look, ain't no shade against Kirsten Allison, but girl, you were playing Star 2.0 on the Lolo, just with a different name and different parents. I'm sorry, you were playing Star after a while. She lost her bite. So when they said
Mike Easton is playing John McBain if he was a doctor. Yeah.
But you know, like when Kiki, when she said she was throwing up the deuce, I was like, fine. But when I saw who it was, I was like, what? I was like, Mercury really is in retrograde because this is some bullshit. I'm like, why are you recasting this? And with that girl, because she sucked. But, you know, that somebody asked me, I'm like, oh, damn. They were like, did Mark Teshner go on vacation? I'm like, ooh. But, you know, I did say, I'm like, well, it could have been worse, y'all. And then, child, the swarm came on me. Even Sarah swarmed on me. I was like, ooh. I was like, it could have been Yvonne Zimmer, child.
Shut up.
I bind thee, Jillian. Shut up.
Look, listen to me good. Look at here now. Chuck Pratt is back in daytime, so stranger things have happened in this medium. So
this is true. So, Sarah, what are your thoughts on the casting news?
I too was like, why? I was so excited that they were getting rid of the character. And again, I hope Kristen Alderson gets a great pilot and becomes a huge primetime star. Sincerely. Star, pun intended.
She's a wonderful actress.
This is Kiki.
Loved her on One Life to Live.
Kiki, yeah, this was a doomed role.
Sarah, preach it.
Kiki has no need. She was like a character that only existed because of the situation that happened of having to write off Star and Todd and John McBain. And I mean, yes, you could say the same thing for Silas and for Franco, although Franco at least was a character who existed on the show, but let's be honest, we never would have revisited that. That didn't work until, you know, Nina came along. Yep. And you know, it was just, she is a completely extraneous character. And frankly, when you think about it, I'm like, the problem is there's only three characters, well, four if you count Rosalie, in their 20s, and we know Kiki just does not work with either of them. And like, when it's, look, in that, during that brief honeymoon period, and it looks like we were free of Kiki, I was like, oh, Amor, we're gonna get Amor back. And now my hopes have dwindled.
Well, and see, my thought was, like, with Kiki leaving, the quick fix for all of this is just doing what I believe to be the case and revealing that Carly switched the paternity test and Morgan's really the father.
Yeah.
So then you have Morgan raising the baby on his own as a single dad, which isn't something we actually see in soap operas.
I don't want to see that boy saddle with no baby. Shut your face. Shut up. I bind you. No, you bind him, Mel. No, you bind him.
It would be something different, and then they can always do something else as a love interest, or they can bring back Ava from
Britain. Bind him.
Maybe.
Bind him. Bind him. You bind. What'd I say?
The baby.
No, you bind. No, I don't want to see that boy saddle with no baby. He should be screwing everything in poor Chuck. And I don't mean the band, neither. He needs to be screwing every chick in that town. No, you shut your face. He needs to be running his daddy's business and taking Michael down is what he really needs to be doing.
And I agree that...
I just told you, you're fine. No. What I say? You have been rebuked. I don't want that child with no baby. Not now, no. He don't need no baby right now. No. No bueno. I mean, shit. Right. I kind of wish that baby could go out of town with Kiki. Truth be told.
What did you think of the news?
Well, I was surprised that they were even going to go and recast her as quickly, because I believe, like the rest of the group here, there's no need. Mel said they had a bloated cast. I think they do have a bloated cast, but they also don't balance it very well. They have a very hard time. There's been so many people that were off screen for so long and just showed up randomly on Friday, and who knows how long it's
the entire prison came back to
life.
I know.
It's just it's crazy. I feel like it's really just to make it. That's Nina's daughter. We've all known for a while, right? This is the daughter that Nina thinks.
How you know?
Well, it's just to me, that's an obvious thing. I have thought for a very long time that this is Nina's baby. They've made such a big deal about it.
Yeah, they set it up.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that too. Like, but the way you said it, just like, we all know. I'm like, how you know? Did they break the news? What I missed?
No.
You knew for a fact. That's why I'm like, how you know? But
my
speculation is fact. Because the way you said it, I'm like, how you know, Mike? I'm like, what you know? But no, like, I mean, that's how
Corday called and we talked about it.
Yeah. Well, Ken was like, I got this tea for you. I mean, that's how I feel. That's how a lot of people feel. I mean, we all felt that Nina was doing a bunch of shit. We all felt that Madeline paid Ava to bust them up, so wouldn't be out of that wheelhouse. So I mean, good God, from Zion.
I guess I'll put it this way. I don't see the need for Kiki the character to be back, but considering the actress's role on The Young and the Restless wasn't memorable, I guess I'm going to just sort of treat her portrayal of the character as a blank slate and give her the straight up 30 days like we normally do.
Because I was like, she
played who?
Exactly. I remember the name. And I was like, wait. I was like, pull this.
So for me, it's like, I'm going to give her a chance. We'll see how she does. Now, we also know people who aren't good in some roles. Jen Lilly is a perfect example of this. She was not the right.
Yeah.
She was not the right Maxie. She went over to Days of Our Lives and has been fantastic as Teresa.
I'll cut for why and all with this. I bet you Jill saw that and was like, I bet you they all did that. I'll tell you that. I mean, you know, like we, I mean, like how some of us went when they had Kelly Sullivan over there, but you know.
She was so young then. Like,
yeah,
it is possible that she spent the past 2 years, like, training and has gotten really good.
I have seen her in primetime shows and I'm just like, girl, where were you in daytime? Like, hello? Like, I've seen her in primetime and I'm like, what happened? So maybe she has improved.
Mel, what did you think of the Fluke storyline this last week?
This is probably my least favorite story on General Hospital right now, just because I feel like it's been going on for about 10 years, and I really don't see an ending in sight for it. So,
in the words of Kathy Lee, wrap it up, Ron! Wrap it up, ladies!
Is Luke Bill Eckert? Is he phased out in a mask again? Is he Jerry Bajax? I just want to know who he is so we can just move on, please. That's all I want. And then you find out at the end of the week that Sonny has put Sean on the case to figure out exactly who is this impersonating Luke. And I was just in my head, I'm like, oh no, Sean is on the case.
Okay.
And never gonna know where is the end of this story.
I will cut for Sean. His shooting, let's just all be real. We're all unanimous. His shooting sucks. But maybe
his investigative skills aren't much better.
Hush. I'm going to go out on the record here. Y'all could come at me because you know I'll send you back with shipping and handling. Maybe Sean will improve. Maybe investigation, he'll improve us. Maybe he'll all shock us all. So, you know.
I'm not holding my breath.
Mel, I feel your pain about the length that it goes on. It always reminds me of Lamb Chop sing along and the storyline that will never end. Mike, what did you think of things? The story this last week.
It's awful. It's painful. I can't. There's no words. I can't stand it. I don't care who Fluke is at all. I don't care.
It's you,
Sarah.
You are Fluke. We are Fluke. We're all Fluke.
I'm Fluke.
I don't know. I mean,
it's torturous to watch it.
I find this hilarious from you, Mr. Days of Our Lives.
I know.
I mean,
different tastes for different types.
Well, I'm going to put it out there. It's the acting as well as the storyline.
Okay, I'm not going to go there with that.
Shade, plant the palm trees.
Wow. The main reason why this storyline has seemed like it's gone on for such a long time is because Tony Gurry was off the canvas for most of it. And I think we all thought, you know, in a few weeks after he returned, it would be that. I will say this, like when they brought his family back into it, I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe this may be an interesting road down. Like, I had not heard of Luke having a sister other than Bobby. And when I found out that, in fact, that was in canon, that was not in retcon thing, because that was before my DH watching time, I was impressed by that use of history.
Yeah,
and I was curious to meet her. So I just wanted to, you know, I think we're all just eager for it to move on to the next stage and to stop having the story be lying about who is this guy, but now that we know who is this guy, what next?
Yeah,
we're ready for the fallout.
You know, I did think for a moment, you know, I knew that Pat existed. I mean, I wasn't around when Pat, you know, when they talked about Pat, I ain't that old. But, you know, when they said the name was Pat, at first, I'm like, oh yeah, she did exist. When I thought Pat, I was like, Ron, are you a sacred SNL lover? Because you know they have that, you know, that is he or isn't she, you know, that person, that character on Saturday Night Live, Pat, that they never knew if it was a boy or a girl. I thought from Alice.
That's pretty clever.
I did think of that. It might be her actually in drag.
I was like, oh my god, is this like that? Because you never, even after the character led the lady who portrayed her, left the canvas, and they made it, it's Pat movie, you never knew if Pat was a man or a woman. So I'm like, are you pulling that out, Ron? I hollered for a good day. But then I'm like, oh well, shit, Pat really is a Spencer, is a girl.
And I don't know who it was that I got into Twitter with this conversation on. It was like, well, if it was, I mean, wouldn't Tracy know, considering
good
she's
God,
had sex
no.
with him? And as I pointed out, well, there's always such a thing as a strap-on.
I rebuke you. You shut up. You in the corner for the rest of the podcast.
I'll Jillian, go with, what do you call her? Boo-boo, Mel?
Who?
Tracy. When you call her...
I do, because I feel like they have Tracy still running around like Boo Boo the Fool, like, oh, yeah. Luke, I love you so yeah. much.
So if it was Pat and Tracy's playing Boo Boo the Fool, then they're really making her really Boo Boo the Fool.
Jillian, what did you think of Patrick and Sam making sweet, passionate love as Jason was ready to shoot them in the head with a bullet?
I was like, now look at you, look at you, look at the ace number one crack shooter about to bust one in them. I think that storyline is going on too much too. I think, you know, there should be something like Jason should just have a jolt and be like, Sam, and she'd be like, what? And she'd be like, how could you do this to our vows? And then I don't know, I don't care. I just want that story needs to wrap up too. Like,
so you're not a big fan of Sam and Patrick?
We need to start playing out a triangle now. Like, I mean, we need to, I'm not a fan. I'm not like some of these people like, oh my God, they're fire. You know, they're cool. They cool. They get the job done. But
they weren't as hot as you wanted them to be.
I sort of agree.
They're not like, and I was like, oh, this is finally they go sleep together. And I watched it. And I was like,
paper, because like, when they tested their chemistry, I was like, oh shit, this is gonna be fire.
Good. Yeah.
And now
I would agree to an extent. I mean, I enjoyed their scenes together. As people who are longtime listeners know, I've never been a big fan of Sam, but I enjoy her chemistry with Patrick. I like their relationship. I did think that they had chemistry in the scenes, but it wasn't as quite as explosive as I expected.
Then they hit up and you were
Patrick
just like,
would be the one
that was it.
That payoff wasn't like, you know, because Patrick was a stud back in the gap. And, you know, Sam ain't no shrinking violet. So I thought it would have been like, oh, sucky. But it was like, whatever. I mean, yeah, it was like, okay. But I just think now they need to do the triangle. They need to either tell Kimberly, put up a shut up girl, or they need to recast her, because you need Robin. You need Robin for a lengthy period of time to play out the triangle, because once again, Robin did what I don't care what none of y'all fans say. I'm a Robin fan for life. So for me to say they need to recast Kimberly, that's saying something. But Robin did what none of those bitches did, and that's bring Jason back from the dead. So,
well, Sarah, I know you've been enjoying Sunny Imprisoned. What did you think this last week of that side of the show?
I mean, that story, it's still fun for me, and I know some people are growing tired of it. For me, like, you know, Sunny could be dragged through the dirt and humiliated for another 5 years, and then I'll be like, cool with the character.
Yep. So, shut your face, girl. You shut your face.
So, I mean, and I've enjoyed his, you know, my enemy's enemy is my friend relationship with Julian, and that they are putting the pieces together, and that they were like, huh, maybe this dude's Bill Eckert. I think they should have called Spencer instead of Sean if they wanted to get, you know, the mystery solved quickly.
Spencer
that little boy would have
shit.
Had that done in
10 minutes.
He'd be like, I read about this on Encyclopedia Brown, and he'd have figured it out.
Spencer would have said, I tried to tell you, Uncle Sonny, that was Uncle Luke months ago. But
I know.
You that
really...
me. Yeah, Spencer tried to tell you, fool. Oh, man. But, you know,
but,
I can't...
you know, I enjoyed that part. And then when they got to We're Gonna Break Out, I was like, okay, I mean, In terms of, then I'm like, I'll be curious to see how they keep them out once they're out, because we know that's going to happen. So.
Well, and it sort of reminded me of on One Life to Live when they had the prison breakout, and it was like, didn't someone, when they broke out of prison, end up getting pardoned or something because they were good while they were out?
I think Lady
Todd.
Todd.
Here comes Sonny's. I'm gonna get out of prison because I was good while I broke out.
Oh yeah. That was years ago. But you weren't watching years ago when they did that. Look at you. But you were watching
like you saved somebody's life or something.
He saved children's life.
I vaguely remember something like that on a prison break.
Yeah, that was a Sidney Sheldon novel.
No, it wasn't. You shut your
face. It was too.
Well, you hush your face. He's talking about when Todd went to.
It happened on One Life to Live. I know it did.
He's talking about. I'm getting there. He's talking about when Todd saved Marty, Jessica, and CJ and Sarah when they were about to, like. Todd broke out of jail and he saw them, like. Over, like they like hit a guardrail or whatever and they were about to go over, and at first Todd, this is before Todd, you know, became Todd, but Todd was like gonna lead them. He was like, psh, that ain't my problem, but he saved them all and everything, and you know, rescued them, and he left them or whatever, and he got shot in the back and shit, and yeah, they pardoned him for that. Yeah, so
yeah. And I will say my favorite, you know, technically it was the mental hospital instead of the prison storyline. I thoroughly enjoyed Nina and Heather becoming prison mom and prison daughter, like Nikki and Red on Orange Is the New Black.
Heather, mama, oh my god.
And that was what I was going to mention to Mike, because I know how much you love Heather.
I think of GH Eva. Decided if Ron and Frank were like, yeah, let's kill off Heather. I don't think Mike will read them for filth, because Mike is such a Heather Webber fan.
I'll go out and pick it with my sign in front of ABC in Los Angeles, just like they all did when they all thought Marlena was dead.
Let's talk a little bit about The Young and the Restless. Mel, what did you think of Phyllis versus Kelly?
Let us pray.
Yeah, let us pray. Okay, so Kelly is poisoning herself, so she's blaming it on Phyllis. Okay. Sure.
Doesn't it smell familiar to you, Mel?
Yeah.
What does it smell like, Mel? Tell the audience, what does it smell like?
Scratch and sniff.
Oh, you shush. No, tell them what it smells like, Mel. Why does it smell reminiscent of something? What does it remind you of?
Yep, Jillian, it's smelling pretty familiar here. Kind of like that Phyllis and Diane story in the early 2000s there.
Isn't it possible that
it likes the same story to me, but not as good, so.
Not as good.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. But you know what's bothering me with this? Jack has tangled with Patty, Diane, Phyllis. You know, he knows crazy bitches. So why doesn't he smell a setup? It's like they've made Jack dumb. They made him dumb. Jack should sit down and be like, wait. You know, at first Jack should be like, but then Jack should be like, wait a minute. You know, I know Red wouldn't do that, would she? I mean, she did run down Paul and Cricket. Well, Paul, but would she really do that? You know, Jack should be really doubtful. They've made Jack really dumb, and I don't like it.
Like when they made Jack not tell Kelly that he was going to get engaged to Phyllis again. He let the two of them figure it out for themselves, and I thought that was a really big ball that was dropped, that Jack would never be that unsure of himself. He would have gone right to Kelly and told her.
Well, I will give them leeway with this. Jack ain't old smiling Jack for nothing. Like, Jack would play, like, I thought they were going to have Jack, like, play the two girls, like, you know, him secretly engaged with Phyllis, but still shacking it up with Kelly until he decided who he could figure out to be with. And then they probably find out, and then they probably, like, you know, cuss Jack for filth, but you know.
Sarah, what did you think of Avery, Joe, and Dylan this last week? I had flashbacks of Jason Morgan bursting into rooms.
I think right about now, Steve Burton was like, reminiscing fondly of his days as Jason too. This, you know, it's just like they're trying so hard to make an exciting storyline about a bunch of characters nobody cares about over something as stupid as a coffee house. And, you know, it's not like one of those things where, again, if the coffee house on Y&R fulfilled the function of the Brady Pub on Days, you might be like, oh, okay, yeah, I don't want that torn down. But it's a coffee
damn
house.
That. If it was the Colonnade Room, I would co-sign them 100%.
But, you know, but it's this, and it's like, Dylan is just a character where, like, I still am like, he's just a guy. Like, there's nothing interesting about him. They're trying to create all of this drama over, to me, what is nothing. Like, Joe is so bad because he maybe has someone throw some bricks through a window. I mean, it's just like, because he's pissed about Avery. I mean,
didn't
it's
y'all,
just...
But did Phyllis say that, or did someone say they wanted Phyllis to say that? I can't remember, but did Phyllis say, you left that? When she saw Joe, did she do that?
Yeah, she did.
I was like, thank you, Jesus. Someone said it, because I was like, oh, Avery. Avery is smart, but I'm like, girl, Dylan must know how to lay it down, because you left all of that for Dylan, the old robotic ass girl.
Like, all I could hand wink is that she wanted to be, like, the star of the relationship. She wanted to be the pretty one.
I guess she wanted to be the pretty one. Because, shit, that boy is pretty who plays whatever his name is,
but
Joe.
The character as a villain is just not, like, he's the same problem that there was of Ian Ward, where you're like, well, do something if you want me to think he's scary, evil. But
in this case, he's pretty to look at. Sorry, Wayweiss.
Well, I mean, that's not enough for me.
Yeah, it ain't. It really isn't. Like, he needs to go. I'm sorry. You got to go, Joe. He's not good. You're not good. You're not good. They're making, like, I feel so bad for Jessica Collins, because she has, like, these two. She had one albatross around her neck. Now it's like, shit, I got a pretty one around my neck. I got two albatrosses, and one is pretty. You know, no shade against Steve Burton, but this boy is not handsome. He's pretty. Like, he really is. He's gorgeous, but this is not good. Like, Avery should be, like, in the mix of Jabot versus Newman. She needs to be thrown into that mix. Her legal brain needs to be in that, not this coffee house shit. Like, if this was the Colonnade Room, hell, if Dylan's coffee house was in Catherine Chancellor's mansion and Victor was trying to pull a fast one, then I'd be like, okay, whatever. It's the Chancellor mansion, but it's the damn coffee house. Who cares?
Mike, what did you think of Neil, Devon, and Hillary?
All right, now.
It's okay. I still feel like Neil needs to see what's going on and fake that he's blind while he's sipping on a martini.
You may get your wish, child. Well, you know what?
But it's okay. It's just not moving fast enough. There's, like, stalling gaps. Don't do it, Luke. I know what you're going to do.
Mike?
Nope.
Can you just repeat what you just said?
What did he say? What did he say?
It's not moving fast enough.
And Luke Kirk came in for the same. Sorry, Mike. Luke owns you that time. Mm-hmm.
Okay, what I meant was...
Seven plus years of podcasting where Mike, of all people, has said it's moving too slow.
That's because there's nothing happening in between. Like, they were really hot and heavy for a while, and then they stopped, and they tried to be nice to each other.
Get them away.
And now, like, the whole thing with Hillary breaking down in with Lily about how she's gonna hurt Neil, and Hillary's tougher than this, and I feel like they've kind of declawed her a bit, and that's
no,
what
I
I'm
mean Hillary.
About.
I don't okay. I think I didn't mind that part. I did mind it with Lily of all people. I'm like, girl, you don't tell your enemy your business. What's wrong with you? I didn't mind it because I felt as though you're showing Hillary has a softer side to herself, which I didn't mind at all. We see that Hillary has a vulnerable side. I didn't like her sharing her tea with Lily, of all
no,
people. Like,
I
no,
didn't
that, that was I'm like, girl, no, you should have been sharing that tea with someone else. But, like, she should have been, like, I think, like, maybe, didn't they try to make her and Sharon, like, friendly? I think that should have been, like, something with Sharon. But Lily,
well, she should be with that other guy that she was screwing around with to get Devon's money, and then
no,
those two
no.
still be
He's gone.
He could still be doing it, and then they're like, it, then you don't know whether they're plotting against Devon or not to get the money or not.
The Young and the Restless already has one cement block on the
show. He's gone. So
are we talking about Victor Newman?
He's gone.
You
know.
Can insert whoever you want for a character that you don't like.
He's gone. Mason's gone. Tyler's gone, and so is whatever.
Now,
they just let
Tyler disappear
into the abyss,
and I don't know why.
And they let Ignacio Siricchio disappear too, but he's on the canvas. No, but he don't miss Y&R. He's where in The Wedding Ringer with Kevin Hart. He has a plum role in there too.
If General Hospital would just get Marco Dapper in a role, that would be a good one, because Y&R wasted him on that storyline. Mel, what do you think of how Jill and Colin's scheme to get Chancellor back is playing out?
Okay, so the whole premise of this storyline makes me angry, because I don't understand why Jill Foster Abbott, who created the fucking men's line at Jabot Cosmetics and divorced John Abbott and has one of his sons who used to own 25% of the company, has to scrounge up money to buy Chancellor Industries. I don't understand.
Oh, remember under Maria?
All of a sudden.
Under Maria, I will cut this regime some slack here. Oh. Just a little. Under Maria's tenure, you know, they had that stupid thing where Jill, Gloria, and Jeff had their money in the Cayman Islands.
Yeah, and it got stolen,
and Victor,
right?
Victor bought the bank and sucked their money away. I wish there was a thread way that Jill somehow... I wish there was...
Did the same?
Well, no, because we know Jill didn't do it. Jill thought she did, and she went to Victor, and Victor was like, no dice. I wanted a thread way to be that somehow Jill got some of the money back or got it back. We know that Jill is a Fenmore, so she should have some Fenmore ducats.
Have money.
She should have Fenmore ducats, and we should hear Jill say, "At least I have my my Jabot stock, which is now Newman Chancellor stock." So somewhere, you know what I mean? Like,
well, and it wouldn't take a giant leap for us to believe that Jill would sell out her whatever portion of Fenmore to Lauren so that she could afford to do all
this.
I mean, that would make sense.
I also think that when she was left her half of the Chancellor, I do remember her saying of the mansion that she the upkeep would bankrupt her. I mean, she said that it would cost
Because she doesn't have any money anymore in comparison.
But you're a Fenmore. They did this whole shit about her being fucking Fenmore. Mm-hmm. You should have Fenmore money. Like, gosh.
You should have money somewhere.
Yes, like, she has that $10
million. And here's the thing that's frustrating to me about this, is the core of the idea of Jill wants to get Chancellor back. Jill, you know, because she feels like it's hers, works in the context of the show's history and is the building blocks of a worthy, interesting, fun corporate storyline. It's just being executed poorly.
They should have, and you know, it shouldn't be Kane. I'm sorry, no shade against Daniel Goddard, but no, it should not be Kane. You are not a Chancellor heir. You are an imposter. Uncle Sam should deport your ass because you did identity theft.
This should be Billy and Jill.
It should be Billy and Jill. Jill should say something like, well, you know, Philip doesn't want to do it because Philip, you know, I don't know, he's still like rustling them cattles, whatever, out in the outback. She should say something like, Chance is upset or something. Chance is like deployed somewhere and Chance is pissed. And she is like, I'm doing this for Chance. I'm doing this for Chance and for Billy to be like, I'm siding with my mama, and he also wants to get back at Victor. Like, Colin...
Or even better, what they could do is they could just bring Nina back and have it be a thing where Nina and Jill team up because of the fact that they're trying to restore Catherine's legacy.
Well, I just remember of any story that brings back Nina for more than
That, you know, they should have Nina come back and be like, you know, Nina should be the voice of speaking for Chance. Nina should be like, Chance is pissed.
Exactly. That's what, when you mentioned him, that's what she jumped
in. Well, Jill, I think Jill is like Tracy Quartermain sometimes. It's like her
they
with
have
Colin.
Her running around.
She would never
how...
trust Colin. I cannot believe that she is. I mean, I think
you know how Tracy is Boo Boo the Fool? Jill is Willy Foo Foo.
Yeah. And, you know, Tristan Rogers tweeted out that he renewed his contract with Y&R, so... And he said it all like he was like boss or something. I'm like, who are you trying to show off with? He was all, I resigned, and that's where I see myself. I'm like, I hope you don't see yourself with storyline, darling, too. But anyways, I mean, Colin should not be in this. He should well, at least, you know what? I take that back. We should start to finally have Colin tap into his mob roots. He should somehow, like, when they're fighting Victor, like, say, like, they're doing Brass and Sassy, which I thought, yeah, okay, that was, yeah, I laughed at that. Like, when, like, he should be, you know, yeah, Jill, my contacts in the underworld, or my contacts, and Jill be like, what contacts? And he'd be like, my contacts was able to delay Newman shipping, so, you know, something, so this could heat up, like, so you can utilize his mobster connections. Instead, like, we all thought that he was supposed to be this all-empowering mob boss, and he just seems like an Australian version of Jeffrey Bardwell. I'm sorry.
We're going to wrap this episode up with Empire.
Yes.
Mike,
yo.
It is my understanding that you've watched two of the three episodes.
I have, yes.
Since last time we podcast.
Yep. Empire, boo.
What do you think?
Love it. It's it was kind of engaging right from the beginning, and I am like everybody else. I mean, who couldn't be captivated by Cookie?
It was so
good. I'm looking forward to watching the third episode. I haven't gotten around to it yet, but
you said kind of captivating. Like, this is coming.
No, I didn't say kind of captivating.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Didn't y'all hear it? I know I heard what I heard.
Mel, you know, I don't think you've been on a podcast where we've discussed Empire. But
you know, Mike, I'm gonna screw with you until you start to see the light. You start to see the days.
Empire. Y'all, that show is fire. Like, every week I cannot wait for Wednesday. I'm like, is Empire coming on? Please, Jesus, let Cookie come on, Lord. I love Taraji is slaying this role. She can do comedy well. She does the serious stuff well. It is amazing, and I love it. Like, yep. There's a couple of weak links on the show, I'm not gonna lie. Like, that boy who plays Hakeem.
Yeah,
oh, baby.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You don't know where you are. You don't have a clue where you are.
Maybe
you don't know anything.
Maybe Taraji will take her under his wing, under her wing, and, you know, and Terrence Howard too. Like, you know,
she could teach that baby how to act. Because right now he don't know. But I think it's a good story. It flows well. It's got a lot of, you know, the family dynamics, values, but on the business side, it's a good mix. It's a good soapy story. As long as they keep doing what they're doing, they're going to be all right. That's a good show.
I need more of Cookie's assistance. Sarah?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, I want to highlight how groundbreaking the ratings for this show have been.
Yes.
They have gotten higher every single week, and they started as the highest rated premiere of a new show this season, even higher than How to Get Away with Murder. Up to 4.4, already the highest rated drama on the thing. This is the first time in 22 years, since like 1994, that a new series that isn't like, you know, a low-rated cable show that went, or like low-rated, you know, on like a CW, WB that went from like 0.4 to 0.5, like a high-rated show has grown in each of its first three episodes in adults 18 to 49. And that is a true accomplishment. The last time that happened, there wasn't, you know, 100 cable series. It was a completely different, there wasn't a DVR. You could not stream TV shows on your computer or tablet. So this is just unprecedented, and how much it has just become a part of pop culture. Like, I got my hair done the other day, and as I was walking out, I heard a different stylist saying to her clients, so you're watching Empire? Like, it has just instantly become a part of our pop culture, and it is, you know, brought back the soaps. I love that it has the old school, like, Dynasty style music cues out of scenes. I mean, I think some critics weren't prepared for what an old school primetime soap it was, but it is fun and it's brought it back.
Jillian, one of the things that I keep watching when I'm watching Lucius is that to me he's like the new J.R. Ewing. What are you thinking?
The new who?
J.R. Ewing.
Oh, okay, Luke, if that's what you think, keep going.
I wouldn't say,
because to me he like J.R. Ewing would be, like, was cutthroat, and to me he Lucius is so cutthroat.
Yeah, mostly. I don't see J.R. I mean,
J.R.
maybe
would eat Lucius for lunch.
Yeah, like I'll put a question mark with that. I'll put you in the corner and put you a question mark there, baby. But what I like about this show is that it goes balls to the wall. I love the fact that they're embracing that it's a soap opera. And I love the fact that the cast, not only the cast, but Lee Daniels will shade you. And people don't realize it. I'm like, I do, maybe because I got my shade meter on tilt. But, you know, when he does interviews with these mainstream publications and sites and trade papers, they'll be like, you know, what do you think about it being a soap? And Lee Daniels, like a TCA, for prime example, TCA. I don't know who asked him that, but he just went there. They're like, you know, what is, you know, you're calling it a soap opera. You know, what, you know, why would you be, why a soap opera or something? And he was like, I love Dynasty. Don't y'all miss Dynasty? I love Dynasty. And Taraji's like, yeah. And she starts chiming in. And I heard she started like imitating Dominique Devereaux. And I was like, bitch, you better work. And, you know, I'm like, oh my God, Lee Daniels, I want to sit down and watch Dynasty at your house, except for that Moldavian Massacre shit. You know, he is embracing it. One of the writers, it's funny that, who said it? Sarah, that has Dynasty music to it, like a Dynasty feel. One of the writers, I think Eileen Chaykin, I think it's her. She used to write for Dynasty. So I'm loving that they're embracing that it's a soap opera. And people, it's not an ugly word that some people who should be nameless, Monda Pimes, y'all can figure that out. You know, they're not using soap opera as a dirty word. Like Lee Daniels is like, I want it to be the Black Dynasty and what? And it's showing that it is. And after 2 episodes, Fox greenlit it for a second season. Now, y'all know Fox is quick to gut a show. After, 4 episodes of that stupid show that they tried to diss Dallas, they cut that show to the quick. But after 2 episodes, they're like, season 2. The show is fantastic. Yeah, Mel, you ain't lie. That baby who plays Hakeem.
Oh, Lord.
We need you to bone up on some acting. Naomi Campbell. Oh, my God. When she came in on that 3rd episode strutting down that runway, I'm like, bitch, you better work.
That's another thing about this show. What? It's got so many, like, great guest stars. Like Naomi just Campbell.
Just like Dynasty did. And he has more. He has more coming. I was a little scared about that. From what I gather, he's going to have Lenny Kravitz. He's going to have Mariah Carey, Courtney Love. Although Courtney Love is a good actress. She's a mess, but she's a good-ass actress.
See, what I thought was interesting about the 3rd episode is how it completely shifted my view of Andre. Because I've found him to be like this boring, uptight character who is being manipulated by his wife to basically go after the crown. That dynamic completely shifted for me as a viewer between in their relationship after him going in, boinking the mayor, assistant mayor or deputy mayor or whatever it was, and coming back. And him having sex with this other woman turned his wife on. I was like, damn.
They kind of like a JR. They have like, that's like a JR move right there. But I don't think JR would tell Sue Ellen that he slept with some Sue Ellen and bust him upside the head.
That dynamic totally caught me by surprise, because in the first 2 episodes, you're led to believe that it's very much her trying to keep him in control because of the medication and him trying to get control of the business. And she's the one who's pulling the strings. Mm-hmm. That dynamic completely changed in the 3rd
episode. Yes. And what I like about this, like, oh my God, that bib. Can we talk about the bib?
Oh, Lord.
She told that bib. I screamed. I'm like, what is this? I'm like, Lee Daniels is just going balls to the wall, baby.
It's not a baby around, and she got a whole bib.
You know what's so funny? He said, I'm like, God, can you imagine what this show would have been like on cable? Because he said cable networks were dying to get this show, but he said his family members can't afford cable, and he wants his family members to watch it. And I'm like, damn, can you imagine the shit that he would have going on if this was on cable? Oh my god, I love, but I do also love
Forget Power, right?
Well, I ain't gonna say that because I live in New York, and 50 Cent ain't rolling up on my ass. Cause no, you ain't coming for me. Y'all ain't gonna be like, where's Chillian? And I'm in someone's trunk. Power is a good show. It is a good show. I think it's.
I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but
it's kind of apples and oranges for me. But what I do like about Power also is that it keeps you guessing, because what I did, I was talking to my friend Nisha. She knows who she is. I will call her Nisha. I was talking to Nisha about this, and I said, you know, they said that Lucius has 3 years or less to live, right? So I'm starting to wonder all type of scenarios. I'm like, A, are they doing this because of the Terrence Howard factor, which I thought was kind of fucked up to ask at TCA? They don't really ask Charlie Sheen about his history, but whatever. They asked about, I wonder if Fox did that because of the Terrence Howard factor. I'm not going to get into that. Y'all Google it. I wonder if it was that. Wonder if Lee Daniels only sees himself doing this for 3 years. Or I wonder if you find out down the line in a soap move, y'all can't be like, oh, that's too soapy. It's a soap. I don't mean y'all, but I mean, you know, listeners. What if we find out down the line that Andre and his wife, or maybe one of Lucius's minions, is in cahoots with the doctor, and they have her on payroll to like manipulate the signs of ALS, and Lucius doesn't have it because someone else is trying to like get Lucius out the way to get control of Empire.
But technically, they don't have to tell three linear years of story in three seasons. They can. 3 years on television with 22 episodes, that could be 6-7 seasons.
True. That's what someone else said. But, you know, I was just running through some scenarios there because, I mean, we know Andre is a son of a bitch. So, if it somehow comes out that he and his wife or his wife did it or something, it wouldn't shock the hell out of me because they're so grimy.
Mel, any final thoughts on Empire before we wrap?
Everybody watch it. If you haven't caught it, please catch up. It's amazing.
Mike?
Looking forward to watching the next episode. I can't wait to see what's going to happen next.
Sarah?
I can't wait to see what Cookie's going to wear in the next episode.
Yes.
She had her Dorian Lord hat on for that funeral. It was like, damn it, we need more hats in daytime.
Stop, shut up. There ain't no Dorian Lord hat. That is Alexis Carrington, okay?
On that note, we would encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Add us as a friend on Facebook, facebook.com/DCConfidential. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
Just want more of that cookie!
Bye.
Bye. Good night, y'all.